This is an oral history interview with Elmer J. Manson of 1740 Wellington Road in Lansing, Michigan. The recording was made by Jim Walkinshaw on November 15th, 1989 at the Oldsmobile History Center. This is tape number two of two tapes.
Okay, the appraisal.
I'm back to Mrs. Lewis.
Right, and the appraisal.
Yes. And so the committee thought that they had the funds to pay the extra $20,000. And I remember we had a meeting up in the top floor of the Michigan National Bank looking out across the city. And the fellow that said that the money would be available had to say that he was not successful. And so we got together, and there seemed to be no other way that we could come up with the $20,000. So on the basis of that, litigation dragged on for, it went on and on and on. The night that the Broadway lunch was being demolished, Marie and I had dinner at Jim's. And we came out, and I said, hey, look what's going on. We better go take a look at that. And we drove down and parked. Jerry Granger was running the job. And the brick came bouncing down the pavement, hit our car, very minor scratch. And one of the fellows came over and started talking to me, and I said, that's the guy I want to talk to, is Gary Granger. So Gary came over and looked at it, and he said, put his name down. And so we got the scratch repaired and painted it at no cost. And I have saved the brick.
You've got the brick.
Yep.
And, that's part of the last brick from the Broadway Lodge.
Yep, we have one of the last bricks.
That was on the corner of...
No, it was in the middle of the block.
Oh, okay.
The 100 block
right
north.
There, just north of...
Yep.
Okay.
But I don't know if there has ever been an analysis. I hope somebody would do it, and I hope I'd be able to get a copy of it. But the one of the... things behind, the reasons behind urban renewal was that if you let those old buildings 20 feet wall to wall, 80 to 100 feet, terribly hard to merchandise out of that kind of a space. Now, of course, when we got around to do it, it hasn't turned out to be retail sales, but I am sure that the taxes that have been paid from the development of a higher, in my opinion, a better use of the property has far exceeded whatever the cost to the city has been. And I think that in a relatively short time, the federal government also, I mean, they were putting in probably 90% of the money. I think probably they'll get their money back, too. So that on an economic basis, over a long run, urban renewal has been successful.
What do you think, and, Elmer, if you look back to the 40s and the 50s, what do you think caused the decline in the downtowns? I call it decline, whatever
sure.
The word for that.
It's a reasonable question. And there are sometimes things which really don't make sense, but they happen.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the spirit of suburban growth, which came after World War II, and I'll blame it on the automobile industry.
Sure.
because everybody was on wheels. And I used to argue with the staff at the planning board, because they would like to have seen every family have a house on a plot of 150 by 200, roughly three quarters of an acre. And I said, you guys aren't seeing the big picture, because there will always be those people who would prefer to live in an apartment, who would like to be able to take a bus downtown. I have never said very much about this, but I was a member of the Metropolitan Transit Authority way back when the bus company went, I think they went bankrupt. Anyway, they went out of business. Mm-hmm. And so the city decided that they should have a bus of one kind or another. And the buses in Lansing had the highest headway of any of the other bus companies in Michigan. And the reason for that is they never had to stop to pick up a passenger. They just kept going. Mm-hmm. But and I'm very glad to see CATA in the position which it is. But one of the things that makes it almost impossible to run a good mass transit is because the houses are spread so far apart. Our son lives in London, and of course that's a high density.
Yes.
And my goodness, Fred doesn't have a car. He goes everywhere by either the underground or the bus.
Mm-hmm.
I even got so I could read the bus map. But you asked the question about why the diversion, and I think that as people were siphoned off from the downtown area, the shopping malls came in. We did two of the early ones, Edgemont out on the west side of town, mm-hmm. and Colonial Village Shopping Center there, and Boston Avenue, Mount Hope. Well, that was a new experience, and people liked it. So they were siphoning off the business activity in the downtown area. And not only that, but it became the popular thing to do. I can remember people going, oh, gee whiz, is it the Birchwood Motel out on the west side of town? And folks would book into that rather than the Hotel Olds downtown.
Oh.
Well, those things feed on one another, because I don't mean to pick on the Birchwood, but you look back at that now, and boy, those rooms are, if not substandard, very close to it. They are, I better be careful what I say. All right, I'll say it. They are unable to compete with the Sheraton and the Hilton and so on. But somewhere that the downtown lost its identity. People didn't go there to shop. They didn't go there for entertainment, the movies, the outdoor movie, all of those things. It just took away from the downtown ambience. So there was a lull for probably 10 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty tough on the downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other downtowns had a similar problem. Well, now you can see that the downtown is coming back because there's 4 or 5, not exactly skyscrapers, but they're certainly high-rise buildings. Downtown Lansing has a parking problem of severe proportions, which they're taking action to correct. But Lansing has become urbanized.
Mm-hmm.
And urbanization is something more than just getting a lot of people together. The people get together for a purpose. There's a good business sense in the downtown area. Outsiders are coming in to establish offices in the capital city. Entertainment is picking up. As I have said, the cultural activities are here. So, in my opinion, Lansing is becoming a urban entity that gives satisfaction to a great many people. Part of this goes I don't know just exactly where this fitted into the pattern, but at the time that the Riverwalk Theater was planning to come downtown,
mm-hmm.
there was a question of whether they could attract an audience. Well, they have not proven themselves yet, but I don't think there'll be any question, because right now, there are enough people in the Lansing area to support a vastly increased number of activities. And whether you call it a critical mass or not, I think that in Lansing, we have a number of these things going, which makes for a good community.
Mm-hmm.
I am a member of Turner Dodge, the Friends of Turner Dodge.
Sure.
And I'm amazed at the number of people that show up for the special events there. And before that tape runs out, I got to put in a plug for the Irie Olds Transportation Museum.
Should talk about that.
Because that was one of the things, oh my goodness gracious, how long ago was that? Probably the mid-70s. Dick Neller and I had been talking that, a lot of other people had too, that Lansing should have an auto museum in recognition of the accomplishments of Irie Olds. It was very interesting that at the time that Flint was talking about Auto World, there was one of the automotive historians from Flint had said that Ford got the recognition, but Olds really made the contribution, because Olds really pioneered the interchangeable parts. And today we don't think anything of that. But back in the days of the early days of the automobile, about the turn of the century, that is, the start of the 1900s, They could make an automobile and it would run, but the parts all had to be machined so that they would fit together. And I'm not too sharp on this, but I believe it was a fellow by the name of Leland who figured out if they could machine all the parts to be interchangeable, that then you could put a car together and get into volume production. And Olds was able to do that because he had the foresight not only of the mechanical engineering part of it, but also the sales, the publicity, the promotion. And I guess you can say he was a real promoter. The curved ash run from the Pacific to New York City, and it just so happened that the car got there at the time that they were having one of the early automotive shows. And Olds was able to put the production facilities together. He had moved to Detroit, and then there was a fire in a factory there, and just how it happened, but I don't recall. I wasn't there anyway.
You just asked.
And, but people in Lansing said that if he would come and locate on the old fairgrounds, that they'd help him with the factory. I don't know how it happened. Anyway, Olds was able to put more cars together than all the rest of the auto manufacturers together. I don't remember what his production was, not tremendous, but what, 5,000 or 7,000 cars a year for, anyway, 3 or 4 years. And then one of those unfortunate things, in order for expansion, Olds had sold more than 50% of the company, so that he ended up as a minority stockholder. And when the differences of opinion came, push and shove, Olds was pushed out. And then he left Oldsmobile and formed Rio. But I'll carry on just a bit. Olds was a pretty talented individual, and he felt that it was not necessary for him to stay with automobiles, and he drifted off to other things. He had an office in the Hollister building, and I've talked with both John Petroff, the owner of the building. Which office did Olds have? And they don't seem to be able to find out.
Isn't that interesting?
And I also talked with Olds Anderson, grandson, and it just seemed to me as if somewhere kicking around might be Ari Olds' desk. And we have pictures of Ari Olds sitting at his desk, and I think that it would be a marvelous exhibit for the Ari Olds Museum to have Olds' desk and Mr. Olds sitting back of it. We could do a real good thing on that, but nobody seems to be able to find it. So I suppose that it got kicked aside one way or another. I hope that some way it might be found. But anyway, we were talking about the Ari Olds Transportation Museum.
Formation of the museum.
And at that time, the fellow, Mike Hoffman, and I think it was still A, B, and T. And he was one of the coming young vice presidents at that time.
Okay.
So it would have been at a meeting of Metro Affairs when we were brainstorming, and I can't remember whether Dick Deller was on that committee or not. I rather think
part
he
of the
was.
Chamber again, though.
This is the chamber committee.
Okay.
And so we said, we were brainstorming on what would make a better Lansing. And so one of the things was we ought to have an auto museum. And Mike says, that's a good idea. Let's research it, and I'll take it to the board. So the concept was approved by the board of the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
We had our first meetings in their conference room, and let me see, Mike Seward, who was at that time executive secretary, whatever they called him in those days, of the chamber, was secretary, and Dick Carroll was the treasurer. And I should identify Dick. He is still the director of the Convention Bureau here in town. George Clemmison was the first president, and I'm getting ahead of the story because after the necessary groundwork, the decision was to incorporate, and those were the officers of the first corporation.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was a question of where could we do it. We had a site committee, of which I was a member. And we looked at all of these sites, and we finally decided that there was the building that had been, shall I say, abandoned by the Cata Bus Company when they got a new building. And it fitted all the criteria quite well, although it looked horrible. And so the arrangement was made with the city, and I think that George Locken was one of the key people in that negotiation. And the board were all gung-ho, and we'd get together and we'd pull out the weeds and scrub the walls and whatnot. And finally we decided that we could have an opening and show people where the museum is going to be. And it happened on a rainy day. So here we were trying to entertain people, water running down through the roof.
Slightly leaking.
That was one of the things, the agreement with the city when we executed the lease, that at the museum expense, a new roof would be added to preserve the city building. So that was a great day, pushing the water over to the drain so that people could walk around and see what the new museum was going to be. I think that with the museum has made its contribution to the city. I can't pick up the attendance, but it's around 15,000 people.
And this would have been
each year.
Elmer, that all started about 1980 or thereabouts?
Oh, yes. We're going to come up to our 10th anniversary soon. Mm-hmm. So if we're moving into the 90s, yeah, about 10 years ago.
Okay.
But,
what, when did you retire, Elmer, from MJK?
I suppose retirement is
it's
a word
relative.
That could be used. But as I say, in 1978, I got to be 65, and by prearrangement, they stopped paying me.
Oh, I see. So you must have been by deduction retired, huh?
Well, I stopped going there to work.
Okay.
I like to draw. Yeah. I like to do things.
So what did you...
Marie didn't want me home for lunch.
Okay.
So I started the firm of Manson Architectural. And for a while, I had drafting help. But... It got to be a burden. I didn't want to make out all those federal forms and all of this, that, the other thing. So I've been primarily a one-person office for the past 12 years.
Where did you go? You moved physically from the old NJK place to a new place, didn't you, at that time?
Oh, yes. And that brings up another item I should be telling you about.
Right.
From... 520 Cherry Street, I moved into a space at the Michigan Theater with the Architectural Consortium that were some fellows that had broken off from MJK. Then from there, we moved over to 120 West Ottawa Street. And in that location, Jim Perkins had the building, Clarence Rosa and I joined a partnership, and we renovated the building, and along came Bill Rawls, and in the discussion about rental, he said, well, what if we purchased it? And at that time, we were glad to get out.
Okay.
And so we sold the building to him. And so I could see the handwriting on the wall. If Rawls had the building, sooner or later they'd need the space. So I moved to the Hollister building, and I had... several quite happy years there.
When did you, do you remember when you moved in there, about?
Oh, 3 years from 77, but...
About 80?
1980.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Right. And then last year, I told my wife I'd take no new projects.
Mm-hmm.
So my architectural work has been tapering off. And I got an office on East Kalamazoo.
Okay.
And I have a spot where I can do watercolors. If I don't need to draw at the present time, the watercolors are not doing very well. But I hope to get back to them soon.
Let me see, Elmer. I was going to ask you about... This is going to jump back in time a little bit.
Okay.
The Miracle Mile.
What oh my goodness.
Miracle Mile?
When did you pick that up? Bill Forgrave had a piece of property that's pretty well developed now.
Where is it?
And that was at the South Pennsylvania at Miller Road.
Okay.
That was. A fair distance beyond the end of the sewer, and I think that Bill had cost him $25,000 or something like that to get the sewer to it. That was one of those nip and tuck battles at the planning board, and I guess that it was my vote that was the deciding vote to approve the project so that he could proceed with the an office and light industry development.
Okay.
Which I think has been very helpful to the city. And. After the vote, when I overheard one of the a couple of the planning board members talking, and they were saying that Elmer caved in to help his friend Bill Forgraves, because Bill had been a former client of ours. The thing which they didn't know is that I had talked with Bill. Could I help him on the development? Because I thought that we...
Okay.
You cut me off at
That's
the punchline.
Right. I know, so put your punchline in here.
Okay, yeah. So we're back to the Miracle Mile right. of Bill Forgraves.
Yeah.
And the thing which my planning board members did not know was that I had asked Bill for a commission to help him lay out and develop the thing. And he said no, he was going to go with an architect from Detroit.
So you really didn't have any financial interest.
There was no financial interest of any kind.
Was that the first time, Elmer, that people had tried to do an industrial sort of development like that?
I think that it was the biggest one in the Lansing area.
Okay.
And I think Bill did a good job.
Still exists?
Huh?
It still exists?
Oh, sure, sure. I was out there a while back, and I would assume that at least 75% of the properties have been developed. I was going to say purchased, because oftentimes people buy two lots and save one sure. for expansion and only build on one of them. But that place is pretty well built up, and I think it's a real asset for Lansing.
How did it get its name, the Miracle Mile?
I don't know. I don't think that Bill promoted it.
Mm-hmm.
We can attribute that to the media. They have to pick out a good moniker for projects of that kind.
Okay.
So, because it isn't a mile.
Yeah, true. Elmer, so, if you were to look back over all those years, we've talked about the things which you enjoyed doing most, projects and things. And what do you think perhaps might have been the least rewarding thing that happened over all those years?
Oh, gee. You asked the nicest questions.
Well, I know it's kind of an opposite question, but...
Yeah. I think the complete frustration over the cross-campus route at the university.
Okay.
Because the chamber, through its committees, had worked diligently to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I get a little confused between that and the 496 penetrator route.
Yeah.
But Ed Boucher was, as far as we were concerned, the front man on that project.
Mm-hmm.
And he certainly was more than patient. The state spent a considerable amount of money laying out the route, traffic patterns, and all of that sort of thing. And so the do-gooders at the university objected. And they were going on about wetlands. And here's a right-of-way across the campus, 400 or 500 feet wide. And I found it hard to figure out how there could be an awful lot of bird nesting in an area that small. And maybe there were a few, but certainly I doubt if there are very many. And they talked about the noise, and one of the reasons that the cross-campus route followed that layout was because it was adjacent to a railroad track. And I think trains make much more noise than trucks. Mm-hmm. And, oh golly, the details are hard to recall. But anyway, there was to be, I believe, two exits for the university. And if you think of the problem that exists now, if you want to get to any place in the university, you get off the expressway and you drive down, you have to make several turns wandering in and out. It's very difficult to find your destination. And it's equally as difficult from the east. It's a little easier from the east, but nevertheless, you still are traversing the campus, and a lot of pedestrians. It's just a confused situation. The cross-campus route would have alleviated that to no end. Mm-hmm. Well, the board of trustees at the university held a special hearing. There was, to the best of my knowledge, no limit on the time that people could talk. I think that I was a member of the highway committee at that time. Mm-hmm. Al Boyd was still there, mm-hmm. as secretary. Mm-hmm. And we had put together what we felt was quite a factual statement. I think the reason why the president of the chamber didn't want to go, and they left it to me, because I was just a sacrificial lamb, that they had to have somebody out there. Because after about half an hour into the hearing, and only people were popping up, they objected to this and they objected to that. And John Hanna was there. And Al leaned over to me, and he says, "We don't stand a chance." And we made the presentation as scheduled, and the board did not accept it. And the scuttlebutt that I received from the State Highway Department is that if that was the treatment that they were to receive after all of that cooperation, coordination, and work with Michigan State University, they were crossing that off their list, and they never would spend any money on it.
Oh, wow.
Now, I don't know what has happened between then and now, but buildings are growing on that spot that was reserved for the cross-campus route, and it's... I don't know whether anything can be done to facilitate traffic through and around the campus. I know I used to be good friends with Harold Lautner, and he spent a lot of time on that sort of thing. And Michigan State's a lot better than many of the other campuses, but I still think that as far as frustrations are concerned, mm-hmm. that was one of the mm-hmm. major ones. And I'll quickly add one other small one. Okay. The demolition of the Michigan Theater.
Okay.
Because I was invited to a breakfast meeting with a contractor developer. And when I got there, the developer had his attorney. And when developers start paying attorney's fees, you know that they're pretty serious. So we had a proposal worked out, and I thought it sounded pretty good. And so I went back, and at that time, Tommy Thompson with oh gosh, another group, had an option somewhat on the theater. And the package that we had with the developer was that the theater would be turned over to DeCapo and certain other spaces that were necessary, and the balance of the building could be used for offices and retail, much the way it is now. And Tommy and his group said, oh no, the whole building should be reserved for art-related groups. Mm-hmm. Well, from my experience with art-related groups, none of them could afford competitive prices for the space. And so that project went down the tube. When Lutz and Brown bought it, I never was able to talk with them directly. They had done some nice projects in Grand Rapids, and pardon me, in Ann Arbor, and I was hopeful that we could get a audience with them and somehow or another work out something to save the theater. But it was not to happen.
Yeah.
So that was another one of the near misses.
On a more positive side, what would you, if you look into the future, Elmer, what would you suggest to people that will be coming behind us as things which might be useful to think about or do?
If anything, there should be a spirit of cooperation. And that's what makes me feel real happy that Terry McCain will be in the mayor's spot for another term. Because I guess I can put the burden of my unhappiness on the open meeting law.
Mm-hmm.
Because it used to be that the council would meet in the city club in the hotel on Monday noon, review the agenda, and figure out whatever their differences were. And so the meetings would open, and they run through the agenda, and they were done about 8:30 or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then there would be another committee of the whole meeting in their conference room and back. And if we were working on a project, we could informally review it. And they could ask all of the embarrassing questions. And the media was fairly kind to us, because they never got after us too much from statements which were made at the Committee of the Whole. And if people have an objection, they should be able to state the objection, and nobody laughed at them much, but then the opposition, so that there was a good interchange. Well, the way it is now, the way it seems to me anyway, that they don't have the chance to have that kind of informal discussion. And so now with the TV camera there, everybody wants to make a speech. And if you're an elected official, you've got to support your constituency. And therefore, what could be a helpful discussion turns into a political battle. And as a result, Lansing gets a bad image. I went to a meeting on the embassy suites. I was not involved in that at all. But I just wanted to go and listen. And in one of the small groups afterwards, happened to be with whatever his name was, who had the franchise for the for the hotel here in Lansing. So, taking the bear by the horns, if bears have horns, I said, what do you think your chances are in Lansing? And he says, oh, well, he was a little fellow. Mm-hmm. And he said, I used to be taller, but they beat me down so much. And so we chatted, and he said, I've got other places I can go. And so he, regardless of what they say in the news and so on, the city council think that they've got the best thing ever going. And that's not true. Those people who have money to make investments can do it in many different places.
That's true.
This was not our office, it was the colleague's office, but they had worked out a scheme with a prospective client, and everything was going nicely, and they took it to the city council, and Jerry Graves, who was then the mayor, wrote a two-page letter, we're pleased to have you come to Lansing, but please remember, if you do come, you have to do this, 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 and this. And actually, all he was doing was reiterating what the people already knew because they can read and it's in the building code. And so the prospective client told my colleague, thank you, but I think we'll spend our money somewhere else. So I think that that spirit of cooperation is really important, and I hope that Lansing would move toward that. And it's a question of being nice to people, and I think that the city cannot get along without business and industry, and competition is pretty tough for business and industry. And sometimes the city should help the newcomers, even though it may cause added traffic, all those other things that people talk about. Mm-hmm. Jim, we've been talking an awful long time.
I know. How you feeling about Don?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I could carry on.
Oh, I know.
But there's a limit to what you
sure.
can stand.
Yeah. And if there are other things that you want to share, so to speak, why?
We can issue an addendum.
We can issue an addendum. So, right. Well, I guess
thank you for inviting me.
I'm glad you
it's
came.
Been a pleasure.
It's been kind of an interesting discussion, and I'll get you to sign off your last little page, and we will be all done.
Okay.
Thanks, Edward.